And I would say one of the reasons we are self-preoccupied is a bit like kind of this feeling of fear, of kind of self-protection, again, like a survival mechanism. And I think what meditation can help us to see is really that we are interdependent, interconnected.
I'm Sadia Tariq, and you're listening to Dhani, the podcast. Delighted to have Martine Batchelor on Dhani. She lived in Korea as a Seon nun under the guidance of Master Kusan for 10 years, and she is the author of 4 books, teaches meditation retreats worldwide, and lives in France. In this podcast, Martine talks about fear, selfishness, self-compassion, self-centeredness, draws out the similarities and the differences between all of these emotions, feelings, and how meditation can help us navigate through our stresses, everyday life, and challenges. Martine, thank you so much for being on Dhani. It's truly, truly a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a great honor.
Ma'am, I will dive right in. But before I do that, please tell the audience all the beautiful work that you are doing.
So I am Martine Batchelor, and I teach meditation and I write books about meditation. But one of the interesting things I have done recently is helping a scientific research to see in France if practicing meditation for seniors would help with aging.
Right. How interesting is that? So my first question here is that what's the basic intrinsic need to meditate? Why should we? Why do we have to?
I would not say that we should. We have to be very careful there. And this is what our scientific study revealed a little bit, that on 45 participants, 40 really could do it and benefited from it. But 5 really did not get on with it, and it did not help them. So I think we have to be careful of saying you should meditate. Mm. I would say meditate if you think it might help you, or if you try it and it appealed to you. So once these conditions are in place, because somebody else might prefer to read poetry, to go for walks, to do yoga, etc., etc. And if you're interested in meditation, I would say generally, in my experience, it's helped one to become calmer, to become more clear. But also, I think one of the main thing about meditation, it's help us to move from our automatic habits, which can be harmful, for them to become more back to their creative functioning. And also, of course, meditation can help us, hopefully, to develop more wisdom and compassion.
Right. So just stepping back, why do you think that we have actually moved from the very intrinsic, basic creative purposes, as you said, to these automated responses? What's happened?
I feel often, I mean, of course, you can have different external, internal conditions, etc., and biological condition too. But it seems to me often we have creative functioning, emotional functioning, physical functioning, relating functioning, thinking functioning. And what happened is that actually as survival mechanism, we develop habits to protect ourselves. I think that's one of the big things about kind of automatic habits. Often they are kind of to protect ourselves. And so when we're young, it might be very helpful. Mm-hmm. And then when we're older, maybe we don't need to continue with these habits. And in a way, meditation could help us to take them back to the creative function.
Ah. So, and you mentioned that meditation, sort of a meditative practice, helps us revive or inculcate wisdom and compassion. So how are these related to meditation? How can we sort of biohack the system so that we may find wisdom and compassion in ourselves?
Well, I think what meditation does, it doesn't bring something which is not there already. Mm. But actually, back to the creative functioning. It helps us to go back to the creative functioning. Because I think one of the major reactivator or something will make us reactive is the way we react when we are unpleasant feeling tone, when we have pleasant feeling tone. This is one thing interesting in the old text, is that kind of to help us to see that one of our main trigger is, I like this, I want more of this. Oh, I don't like this, I don't want any of it. And so in a way, this stops us from really creatively engaging with what is difficult or what is beautiful. And so I think meditation helps us to be more clear what is going on for ourselves and for others. But also I think meditation helps us to really decrease what I would call one of the unfortunate habits we have is self-centeredness. So if we are less self-centered, then we're going to be more open to others. And this is one thing we can notice when we meditate. We actually can see two levels of thinking. And one level of thinking is really about me, what I call selfing. Look at me, I exist, don't forget me. And the other level is a functioning, planning, remembering, organizing, things like that. And what I found interesting with meditation is that over time, just by coming back to the breath, to the sound, just by being aware of change, actually this dissolves that level of just kind of being so preoccupied with the self. When actually we are living right now, we don't need to think about the self or what do other people think about it.
Interesting. Tapping into your Buddhist background, do you really believe that human beings are self-centered? And if so, then why?
I believe, not everybody is self-centered to the same degree. But I would say, for myself, when I started meditation, when I was about 22, and I started to meditating kind of 10 hours a day for 3 months at a time, within a month, suddenly I realized, because you see, you're sitting in meditation and you don't do very much else. So you can really see your mind. And suddenly I saw all my thoughts were about me. Because until then, I thought I was really kind of altruistic, thinking of others before myself. And then I realized, no, if one look at one thought, one is fairly self-preoccupied. And I would say one of the reasons we are self-preoccupied is a bit like kind of this feeling of fear, of kind of self-protection, again, like a survival mechanism. And I think what meditation can help us to see is really that we are interdependent, interconnected. And then by realizing that interdependence, that interconnection, then the fear, the fear of kind of this protecting mechanism, which we don't need up to a point, help us to open more to others. And also, I would say, to be less fearful.
So talking about fear and talking about anxiety and talking about the last 2 years, well, 18 months, you think a strong meditative practice would have helped us in this this worldwide global isolation?
I know for myself, and I know for others who meditate, they found it very helpful. For me, it's kind of it felt. I have meditated for the last 40 years. And in a way, it felt that meditation prepared me for this very difficult time. Mm. And made me, I would say, creatively engage with it. Because as soon as we were confined, then in France, we were quite heavily confined. And I thought, everything is going to be different. I'm not going to travel and teach and do this and do that. But could I use this opportunity to do things differently? And then I, in a way, made three, you could say, vows, three intentions, that from now on, I would not stress, because I'm somebody who can be occupied and kind of organizing. And I thought, no stress. I take all the time I need. The second thing I thought, maybe this is an ideal opportunity to be differently in relationship. Can I be more generous in my relationship? And the third one was really this deep appreciation for essential worker. Because what I recognize myself is that when I used to be a nun in Korea in the 70s and the temple were very poor. At times, you would have no water, no electricity, and things like that. But what I noticed in the confinement here in France is that I still had electricity, water, I could still go to the supermarket and eat. And I thought, but those people put themselves in danger for all of us to survive. So again, this deep, in a way, compassion and appreciation of all the essential workers.
Wow. So really, you know, sort of enlightening you with so many positive things, whether it's gratitude or whether it is peace or whether it is realizing your good fortune. I mean, it's just so many things that you gathered out of this. How beautiful, how beautiful. Ma'am, moving on, tell us about this divide that we have between the physical body and the spiritual self, and how meditation can bridge the gap between the two.
So personally, the way I would look at that is actually turn it a little around. And think more about condition. But I think meditation is to help us to realize how much we are influenced by condition. And so I would say we are a flow of inner condition meeting outer condition. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, for each of us, we have this emotional condition, bodily condition, mental condition, and then we have to relate to the world, which also help us to survive. And so personally, I would not make it two different things, the spiritual and the body. Because spiritual can only exist if there is a body.
But for sure.
In terms of spirituality, personally, I would look more, when are we intending toward the spiritual, which for me would be wisdom and compassion, and what are the obstacles which are in the way to being spiritual, to be wise, to be compassionate. And it seems to me the main obstacle is grasping and fearing. And so that in a way, again, I think what is interesting for me is when we all have time, we are wise. We all have time, we are compassionate. So that's beautiful. We all have that ability. But then the question is, when does it go? When do I suddenly lose wisdom? When do I suddenly lose compassion?
True.
And that's very interesting to see that often it's conditioned. If one is in a hurry, if one is stressed, if one is ill, if one is hurting. And so then it becomes interesting to look what's happening with the condition, which in a way stop me from being wise, stop me from being compassionate. Or sometimes we have to be more compassionate to ourselves, sometimes more to others. So I think, again, it depends also which direction you could say the spirituality goes. Is it going toward others? Is it going toward myself? Is it going toward both?
Ma'am, you mentioned compassion to ourselves. So what does self-compassion look like? What is self-care?
So for me, I would say there is these four beautiful qualities that are recommended to practice, and which are loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, altruistic joy, and equanimity. And the compassion is actually being available to suffering. Available to suffering of ourselves, available to suffering of others. And in a way, bringing kindness to that. So the compassion is not this heroic, regardless of condition, I'm going to be compassionate. But actually, according to condition, sometimes I can be more, or sometimes I can be less. But to me, compassion is opening the heart to suffering, to recognizing suffering, and in a way trying to the degree we can to alleviate it. So for us, it's again seeing what are the conditions which make me suffer more, what are the conditions which make me suffer less, and how can I help myself? And I think part of that is, can we be less directed toward perfection? Can we be a little less like criticizing of ourselves? And in a way to see generally whatever is going on, we doing the best we can considering the circumstances.
Amazing. Amazing. I was just wondering that how does the brain and the heart, what roles do they have in a particular meditative practice?
Well, I think in a way, in terms of the brain, again, this is always the question of, you know, consciousness. But if we look in the framework that, you know, what we call in Buddhism, Nama Rupa, which is kind of the constituent of consciousness, which includes the body, in the world. And so for me, I would say that in a way, when we sit in meditation, we train to cultivate focusing, we train to cultivate questioning, but we train to cultivate them with a very friendly attitude. So it's as important to have the friendly attitude than to do the exercise itself, that it be trying to be aware of the breath, the sound, change, or whatever it might be. So to me, here you could have the two together. Or in terms of the brain, we use attention. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the heart, we bring that friendly quality. So we're not giving ourselves a hard time when we meditate.
So the softness comes in from the heart, the gentleness comes in from the heart, and the reasoning and the attention and focus comes from the mind.
Yeah, you could say that.
Ma'am, moving on, now that the world is slowly opening up and trickling back to what we thought was normal 2 years ago. What do you think? What kind of tools do we need to have or nurture to manage the new world?
I think in a way it's each of us have had very different circumstances. So I think we have to be careful of not everybody has been privileged in the same way in terms of dealing with COVID-19. Mm. I'm very lucky. I am in the countryside. I'm relatively financially stable. I am older. I have a very good medical system. So, I mean, I'm fairly privileged. Mm. You have other people who are poor, or you have other people who are essential worker. You have people who've lost their job or working in kind of different conditions or with their family. So I think, in a way, you have many different conditions. People will find themselves now. Yeah. COVID-19 seems to be a little better thanks to the vaccine and different things. And here, I would say, in a way, back to these four qualities. Mm. The friendliness, quality of generosity, but also quality of groundedness. Because although it looks a little better, and also I think we have to be careful. I want it to be like it was before. I mean, it might be just like it was before. And for some others, it might not be like it was before in a good way, because then they can really change their lives, or in a bad way because it's more difficult for them. And also what I would suggest is to remember to reach out if they can to the support system. It seems to me that this COVID-19 at one level has really reminded us of being responsible, of being part of the social structure of a culture, being part of a community. And to me, what would be really essential is how can I cultivate, flourish, have this connectiveness between people at whatever level, that it be family, that it be in the village, that it be in an area. But how can we support each other in a generous, grounded, and kind of open way? To me, that's what we need now, to really reconnect. But to try, can we reconnect in a really kind of different way, in a way which is really rich and we can also help the rest of society?
Fantastic, fantastic. Ma'am, coming towards your new project, your scientific research, can you share anything with us that might benefit us, the audience, me?
Well, what was very interesting with this project is that for 3 years, there was a three group of 15 people, seniors in France, people over 65 and who had retired and were able to participate in this study. And so once a week, they had 2 hours together with the 15 people, and they were taught meditation over 18 months. And then every day we hope that they were doing 20 minutes of meditation with the help of a kind of iPad and audio. And what personally was so heartwarming to me is that these people had never meditated, but they really took to it. Mm. Really took to it. Mm. Most of them find it quite helpful, really kind of develop calm, to develop clarity, but also to develop friendliness toward themselves. Because when we introduced compassion meditation, they were like saying, but compassion to me? Should not it be just compassion to others? And we said, no, you're part of everybody. You have to be included. And it was so interesting, people saying, like when they're ill, they feel guilty to be ill instead of feeling compassionate that they were ill. And now realizing, oh yeah, I can have compassion for myself when I am ill. And it also helped them in terms of attention. Also, it again helped them in terms of anxiety. Like one of the beautiful things that happened is one lady after 9 months saying, I don't know why, but people are more friendly to me now. Are you more friendly or are you less afraid? So that you can see they are more friendly. We were not sure, but we thought that was a beautiful moment.
Oh, amazing indeed. Oh, wow. Yeah. So, again, similar to what you suggested about the lady, that are you more friendly or are you less fearful? So, fear keeps us away from people?
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, you see what is interesting with fear, it's a creative function of this organism, and that's what has helped us to survive in evolution up to now. So fear is very important as an emotion, because it's really kind of help us to survive, protect us.
Mm-hmm.
Then fear can become amplified. Well, sometimes we fear, what we have to be careful is fear of in advance. Like, what if this happened? What if that happened? But you can only, that's what you realize in meditation, your creative potential can only be activated now, not in the future. You can't do anything about the future.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, you can work now, so you can go in a certain world, a certain future. But often when people are afraid, I say, wait a minute, are you afraid because something is really happening now? Or are you afraid because you're thinking something later will happen and it will be hurtful or whatever? So really, I think what meditation can help us to do is kind of, what's going on now? Have I good reason to be afraid now? If so, what can I do to help myself? What can I do to stop the harm? But I don't need to harm myself now to something that has not happened yet. And it's great when people come to talk to me about dying. I don't want to be kind of light about this, but some people kind of were seniors and they worry about dying. And I said, well, you're not dead yet.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy your life now. Enjoy your life now. And what is the most you can do now? What is the least you can do now? What is possible now?
Wow, yeah, if only we would understand this. Ma'am, coming just towards the end of the podcast, can you share with us your personal meditative practice?
So personally, I have been meditating for the last 40 years. I started in Korea as a Song nun. And then the practice there was to ask a question. What is this? So to develop a sensation of questioning. Then after 10 years, I stopped being a nun, went back to actually live in England. And then I became more aware of what we call insight meditation. Mm-hmm. And so with insight meditation, you are mindfulness meditation, it's called nowadays, you are aware of the breath, aware of the body, aware of your feeling, aware of the thought, with this friendly attitude. And also you have the beautiful qualities, cultivating loving kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity. So let's say that at any given time, I will be practicing one of these three options, you could say.
Interesting. So do you sort of meditate daily?
So, yeah, I mean, we try, my husband also is a meditator, so we try to meditate 30 minutes every morning, but as long as I don't have to take care of my mother or go to the market, but generally, yes, I will try to sit 30 minutes.
Oh, wow, how nice. Right, ma'am, just closing off, if the audience wants to get in touch with you, where can they contact you, how can they find out more about the work that you're doing?
So, I mean, I have a website and they can just Google my name, martinbatchelor.org. Otherwise, they can go on YouTube and they can find, I have little clips of how to meditate with the breath or with different things like this.
Oh, sure. Perfect. Perfect. Ma'am, thank you very, very much for your absolutely wonderful insight into the world of compassion and meditation and how we can perhaps step into this new post-COVID world, fingers crossed, in a more aware, cognizant manner. Audience, Martine's website address and other social media will be in the show notes. Ma'am, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Please. And you take care.